But the American people cannot advance along that chosen road as long as ideas proposed by the executive and enacted into law by the legislature are being overruled by the 9 old men appointed to the Supreme Court by Roosevelt's conservative predecessors. The first fireside chat of his second term tells of his plan to infuse new life into the court and bring it into closer touch with the national pulse.
Tonight, sitting at my desk in the White House, I make my first radio report to the people in my second term of office. I'm reminded of that evening in March, 4 years ago, when I made my first radio report to you. We were then in the midst of the great banking crisis. Soon after, with the authority of the Congress, we asked the nation to turn over all of its privately held gold, dollar for dollar, to the government of the United States. Today's recovery proves how right that policy was. But when almost 2 years later, it came before the Supreme Court, its constitutionality was upheld only by a 5-4 vote. The change of one vote would have thrown all the affairs of this great nation back into hopeless chaos. In effect, 4 justices ruled that the right under a private contract to exact a pound of flesh was more sacred than the main objectives of the Constitution to establish an enduring nation. In 1933, you and I knew that we must never let our economic system get completely out of joint again, that we could not afford to take the risk of another Great Depression. If we learned anything from the Depression, we will not allow ourselves to run around in new circles of futile discussion and debate, always postponing the day of decision. The American people have learned from the Depression, for in the last 3 national elections, an overwhelming majority of them voted a mandate that the Congress and the President begin the task of providing that protection, not after long years of debate, but now. The courts, however, have cast doubts on the ability of the elected Congress to protect us against catastrophe by meeting squarely our modern social and economic conditions. Last Thursday, I described the American form of government as a 3-horse team provided by the Constitution to the American people so that their field might be plowed. The 3 horses are, of course, the 3 branches of government, the Congress, the executive, and the courts. 2 of the horses, the Congress and the executive, are pulling in unison today. The 3rd is not. It is the American people themselves who want the furrow plowed. It is the American people themselves who expect the 3rd horse to pull in unison with the other 2. When the Congress has sought to stabilize national agriculture, to improve the conditions of labor, to safeguard business against unfair competition, to protect our national resources, and in many other ways to serve our clearly national needs, the majority of the court has been assuming the power to pass on the wisdom of these acts of the Congress and to approve or disapprove the public policy written into these laws. We have, therefore, reached the point as a nation where we must take action to save the Constitution from the court and the court from itself. We want a Supreme Court which will do justice under the Constitution and not over it. In our courts, we want a government of laws and not of men. We must have men worthy and equipped to carry out impartial justice. But at the same time, we must have judges who will bring to the courts a present-day sense of the Constitution. Judges who will retain in the courts the judicial functions of a court and reject the legislative powers which the courts have today assumed. What is my proposal? It is simply this. Whenever a judge or justice of any federal court has reached the age of 70 and does not avail himself of the opportunity to retire on a pension, a new member shall be appointed by the president then in office with the approval, as required by the Constitution, of the Senate of the United States. That plan has two chief purposes. By bringing into the judicial system a steady and continuing stream of new and younger blood, I hope first to make the administration of all federal justice, from the bottom to the top, speedier and therefore less costly. Secondly, to bring to the decision of social and economic problems younger men who have had personal experience and contact with modern facts and circumstances under which average men have to live and work. This plan will save our national constitution from hardening of the judicial arteries. If by that phrase, packing the court, it is charged that I wish to place on the bench spineless puppets who would disregard the law and would decide specific cases as I wish them to be decided, I make this answer, that no president fit for his office would appoint, and no Senate of honorable men fit for their office would confirm, that kind of appointees to the Supreme Court. But if by that phrase the charge is made that I would appoint and the Senate would confirm justices worthy to sit beside present members of the court who understand modern conditions, that I will appoint justices who will not undertake to override the judgment of the Congress on legislative policy, that I will appoint justices who will act as justices and not as legislators, if the appointment of such justices can be called packing the court, then I say that I, and with me the vast majority of the American people, favor doing just that thing now. The number of justices has been changed several times before in the administrations of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, both of them signers of the Declaration of Independence, in the administrations of Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, and Ulysses S. Grant. Fundamentally, if in the future America cannot trust the Congress it elects to refrain from abuse of our constitutional usages, democracy will have failed far beyond the importance to democracy of any kind of precedent concerning the judiciary. During the last half century, the balance of power between the three great branches of the federal government has been tipped out of balance by the courts in direct contradiction of the high purposes of the framers of the Constitution. It is my purpose to restore that balance. You who know me will accept my solemn assurance that in a world in which democracy is under attack, I seek to make American democracy succeed. You and I will do our part.